Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa, bringing you the News Gazette this Wednesday, November 26th, the day before Thanksgiving. Hope you're all having a great day and getting ready for the big turkey day. Today on the front page, at the very top, is a greeting from your newspaper, Happy Thanksgiving. Today's premium edition is stuffed with holiday ads. There will be no paper on Thursday, it reads. Head to newsgazette.com for the latest updates. Our regular publication schedule resumes on Friday. And today on the front page is a large picture of longtime Champaign planning director Bruce and wife Mary as the grand marshals for Saturday's Parade of Lights through downtown, an area he spent his career helping to revitalize. And there's an article that goes with that. It's called Knight's Exemplar by Anthony Zillis. When Bruce Knight moved to Champaign in 1988 to become the city's planning and development director, he was greeted by a downtown full of vacant buildings. 2 years earlier, the city had removed its open-air pedestrian mall, a 13-year-old experiment that involved closing off vehicular traffic to much of Neal Street downtown. Opening it back up caused complications. That pretty much killed the commercial activity downtown, Knight said. There were a lot of vacant storefronts. When you were walking around at night, you felt a little unsafe because there's nobody down here. So really, a big part of our initial focus was bringing downtown back. So Knight and his fellow members of the planning department got to work. Using the city's tax increment financing district, grants and its ability to issue liquor license to incentivize property owners to revitalize their buildings. Nearly four decades later, downtown Champaign is in a far different state, with dozens of restaurants and bars, a hotel, new apartment buildings, and a newly built downtown plaza, complete with a stage. Along the way, a new tradition began to mark the beginning of the holiday season. Each year, the city holds its Parade of Lights on the Saturday after Thanksgiving to commemorate the 25th edition. Knight and his wife Mary will serve as Grand Marshals of the parade, which begins at 5 p.m. on Saturday. It kind of surprised us, Bruce said. I actually wasn't sure we were Parade Marshal worthy, but it's a nice honor. Their daughter Libby was a little bit less surprised. I think that's perfect, she said. They really are huge in the community. Underestimate her at your peril. Of course, much has changed in the Knights' lives during their 38 years in Champaign. Their two children, Libby and J.R., were young when they moved here. Now they're fully grown, and J.R. and his wife, Leanne, have three children, Janiyah, Jamair, and Jayla. Many worked multiple jobs, including as the Mettler Center's university liaison, and then as an administrative assistant at St. Matthew's Catholic Church. Over the decades, they became diehard Illinois fans, despite the fact that they originally bonded over their love of Iowa State athletics when they met as sophomores on the Ames, Iowa campus. Illinois fans disliked University of Iowa athletics most as much as we do, said Bruce, who received a master's degree from Iowa in 1986, but found the idea of rooting for the Hawkeyes a non-starter. One of the things we decided when we moved to Champaign is that we had no reason not to root for Illinois. 6 years ago, a massive change began to develop. At first, the small tremors in Mary's hands were diagnosed as a condition called essential tremor disorder. But as her problems worsened, including difficulties with walking, she was advised to visit a neurologist. In 2019, Mary was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which would progressively inhibit her abilities to move and to speak. The latter has been particularly difficult for a woman who, as her husband said, knows no strangers. I can be talking just regularly, and I think, why can't they hear me? Mary said in an interview. I think that's the hardest part. You think you're talking out loud enough for people to hear you, and it's frustrating. While the diagnosis was life-changing, Mary kept a positive outlook, Bruce said. She became involved with Speak Out, a program that helps people with Parkinson's improve their ability to communicate effectively, and she became an active part of the local Parkinson's community. She just really is an inspiration, honestly, with how she took that diagnosis and didn't let it get her down, Libby said. A lot of times people are like, oh, I'm so sorry. And she's like, don't be sorry. I appreciate it. But we're just going to take it one day at a time and get through whatever obstacles are in front of us. There have definitely been highs and lows, Libby said. But I'll say, underestimate her at your own peril. Today, Mary uses a walker to move about the house, and outside she gets around in an motorized scooter or a wheelchair, usually pushed by Bruce. Those impediments haven't stopped the couple from experiencing life. In the summers, they can be found at Friday Night Live and elsewhere throughout downtown. Among other activities, Mary heads downtown weekly to attend classes through the U of I's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which offers classes designed for people aged 50 and older. In the fall and winter, of course, there are fixtures at Illini volleyball, football, and basketball games. There's not much good you can say about Parkinson's, but our seats at sporting events have gotten a lot better, Bruce said. You take the perks when you can get them. I'm pretty lucky to be their daughter. The Knights do encounter obstacles regularly, of course, and those obstructions have affected the way Bruce thinks about city planning. I've become so much more aware of issues for the disabled population and accessibility and what that looks like, he said. Most places have a men's and a woman's restroom, and if it's just the two of us, she can't go in by herself, so it becomes a challenge looking for a place that has a family restroom or unisex restrooms. Or ramps when you're pushing a wheelchair. A lot of places still don't have doors with a button that open the door. So those are just some of the challenges that we have to work through. And for my planning for the city, causes me to think a lot more about how we build a city that's accessible for everybody. The Knights' deep connection to Champaign is shared by their children, who live both in the city with their father, that their father helped to revitalize. With that proximity, their children and grandchildren have formed a support system around them. That support hasn't waned since the first days of the diagnosis. And there are pictures of the Knights. One here, it says the Knights in 1975, when they were students at Iowa State, where they met as members of a planning committee for the school's annual spring celebration. In London in 2011, where Bruce represented the American Planning Association at the Royal Town Planning Institute. And with Illinois men's basketball coach Brad Underwood at an Illini Rebounders event in 2021. Also on the front page, an article from Rantoul by Jim Rosso. Injured Rantoul student, we're praying and hoping for the best. On the eve of Thanksgiving, support continues to pour in for a seriously injured Rantoul High School senior. Surrounded by family, Allison Shaddix remains in critical condition at Lurie's Children's Hospital of Chicago. She was injured in a head-on collision Friday on U.S. 45 near Ludlow that also claimed the life of a 91-year-old woman and injured two others. A GoFundMe account under the title of Help Allison Shaddix Heal After Tragic Accident had raised $9,481 as of Tuesday night. Shaddix, 17, faces a long recovery, family said on Tuesday. Rantoul's Sheer Excellent Salon, 17 South Century Boulevard, is accepting, collecting, and delivering donations to help the cause. Owner Bridget Schluter, a family friend, said anyone can drop off anything at any time. Gifts, cards, checks, anything that can help. It's a tragedy that no one ever expected. We're hoping and praying for the best. Shaddix plans to graduate in December and is enrolled in Parkland's College CNA program starting in January. Rantoul has always shown up for their community, Schluter said, and we're glad to do our part. There's also a picture at the bottom of the page, the front page, with the heading, All Systems Go. And it's Unity quarterback Dane Eisenmenger heads to the front of the gym as team captains are introduced at Tuesday's prep rally for the state-bound football team in Tolono. And that is covered then in the sports section. And the article about the Knights exemplar continued on I'm sorry, I'm going to pick up, because I don't want to leave out this important part of that article. It says that the last couple of years, the children have been there for their parents, and at 5 p.m. on Saturday, the Knights will take their place in the Parade of Lights, which begins on Main Street. They'll pass the current downtown Champaign Plaza on Neal and finish by riding past the parking lot that will become an even larger section of that plaza that may be ready for use in Knight's 40th year leading the city's planning department. The obstacles that come with Parkinson's haven't dampened the Knight's zeal for living a full life. On Saturday, that means keeping a full schedule. After the parade wraps up, they'll rush to go to Gies' Memorial Stadium for the Illinois Northwestern football game, which kicks off at 6:30. They're just two really great people who are enthusiastic about their life, enthusiastic about their family and their friends, and really care about their community and just love each other a whole lot, Libby said. They're just two people I look up to that strive to kind of follow their example. I would say I'm pretty lucky to be their daughter. And there's a picture of Bruce and Mary Knight posing for a photo with their daughter Libby and son J.R., granddaughter Janiyah, daughter-in-law Leanne, granddaughter Jayla, and grandson Jameer in downtown Champaign. And that concludes that article. Let's continue on with some news from the community. From the City of Champaign by Jana Wiersema, Strides Shelter considers serving only women as revisioning continues. About 2 months after a revisioning plan proposed converting the Strides Shelter into a men-only facility, shelter officials are now considering the inverse option, making the shelter women-only. We were looking to have our women actually move through Cunningham Township, said Charlene Murray, interim executive director at Strides. However, we realized there are more women on our wait list and in the community than they would have room for, so we decided not to go that route. She added that the idea of turning Strides into an awesome women's shelter isn't confirmed and hasn't really been discussed too much, but it's an option and it's on the table. Another factor in this idea is that the winter emergency shelter located at the former Illinois National Guard Armory will be men only, she said. Murray wrote in a report to the City of Champaign Township that the shelter has met with other entities to discuss the idea of serving women only, which will eliminate the majority of the issues that Strides has had attempting to hold an all-gender congregate space. Her report, which is on the agenda for the Township's Board's December 2nd meeting, details progress made by the shelter as it seeks to improve operations, safety, and longevity. Currently, Strides still houses both men and women, as it always has, Murray told the News Gazette. The shelter plans to reduce its maximum capacity once the winter shelter at the Armory is up and running, and the new limit being 60 to 64 guests. However, Strides has plans to temporarily expand this capacity during the winter thanks to an emergency and transitional housing grant. We are still working out the details, Murray said. We have had some staff reduction, which might alter our plans a little bit. However, the plan is to use this funding to place security outside the shelter. The grant can also go toward food, cots, PPE in case of sickness, and utilities. The shelter hopes to expand the house 74 to 80 guests during the winter, depending on staffing, Murray said. As for the shelter's future, Strides has largely relied on American Rescue Plan Act funds. While the township had hoped to secure permanent funding for the shelter via a property tax increase, a referendum on the matter failed during elections in both November 2024 and April of 2025. When asked how long the shelter's current funding will allow it to stay open, Murray replied, "Our deputy supervisor is working diligently on the budget, and there have been updates as we have obviously taken on another grant or two, and I don't have those updates. So, as of now, the date is still February." The shelter has been awarded a $60,000 grant from the Illinois Medical Respite Capacity Building Initiative for serving medically fragile individuals, she wrote in her report. Strides is in talks with a potential funder about supporting addiction recovery services and is also seeking another $25,000 in ETH funding, which Murray said may very well be used for a fence. We still need that physical barrier and delineation, visual delineation, where Strides is, and then where the public is, she said. And without that, we pose a bit of a risk to our guests who are looking for safety when they come here. There are real predators, unfortunately, in Champaign, and they do come by here, and they try to pick up women, and it's awful. There are people who don't belong to Strides, but that, I guess, try to engage with our guests. Per Murray's report, the shelter has requested a meeting with the City of Champaign and the Police Department to discuss encampments on the city property outside the shelter and how to address unwanted activities and predators outside of Strides. Murray also wrote that the shelter has connected with several faith-based groups to discuss Strides' revisioning plans and is also working to engage with businesses and other neighbors. About a month ago, several downtown businesses and property owners signed off on a letter to city and township officials expressing their concerns about the shelter, including Martinelli's Market. There was a large email group, Murray said. I had hoped to see more people, but I was unable to meet with the folks from Martinelli's and then a community member. They were able to share their experience with the homeless population. I was able to meet with the folks from Martinelli's, so they were able to meet with them and share their experiences with the homeless. I was able to explain that we are experiencing, unfortunately, some of the same issues that they are. She added that while she was aware that a lot of the community is just waiting on Strides to close, that outcome would put more people on the street and exacerbate problems. The shelter and the community need to work together on finding solutions, Murray said. When it comes to guest behavior, the shelter has also implemented a new strategy involving care plans for individuals who use substances on or near property or engage in repeated unwanted behaviors due to substance use, she said. Such individuals will be service paused and meet with shelter administration to discuss the matter, including the guest side of the story and what personal goals they hope to achieve. The latter will be reflected in an agreement signed by both shelter leadership and the guest. If it is a substance use, we do ask them to also go to a 30-day program where they are allowed back into the shelter if they complete it. If the treatment is not available immediately, the guests will be asked to attend Narcotics Anonymous meetings, which are held at the shelter every Friday. As for planned staffing changes at Strides, Murray wrote that the initial reductions were achieved without the need for layoffs, as staffing changes occurred through natural attrition and other personnel transitions. She estimated that there are about 20 staff members currently at the shelter, with 4 being lost. Murray declined to discuss additional staffing changes, plans for the shelter, along with whether there were any patterns in the reasons staff gave for their departure. The City of Champaign Township is dealing with its own vacancy following former supervisor Kyle Patterson's resignation. The township board, which is responsible for appointing his replacement, is currently accepting applications for the role up until 5 p.m. on December 16th. Jill Terryberry, who previously applied for the position in 2024 and recently retired from working at Strides, said at a recent township board meeting that he would support having Murray be the new supervisor. Murray declined to discuss whether she's considering applying for the post. Another article in our communities by Luke Taylor from Urbana with the heading March 13th Incident. Champaign woman pleads guilty to DUI in crash that killed a 2-month-old. A Champaign woman pleaded guilty Tuesday to aggravated driving under the influence in a crash that resulted in the death of a 2-month-old child. Cartilla Brooks, 40, said 3 charges of aggravated driving under the influence in a crash that resulted in great bodily harm dismissed as part of a negotiated plea deal. Lindsay Clark Rivest, criminal division chief for the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office, said that the deal also included her office's agreement to cap their sentencing recommendation at 10 years in prison, rather than the possible maximum of 14 years. Clark Rivest also said that this conviction does not actually include mandatory prison time. In the event that Brooks is able to prove extraordinary circumstances, she could be sentenced to probation instead. Any prison sentence will be served at 85%. The charges were related to a March 13th incident in which Brooks drove a black GMC Envoy eastbound on Colorado Avenue and into the four-way stop intersection with Philo Road, without stopping at around 5:52 p.m. According to witnesses, as well as security footage from a nearby business, the Envoy clipped a Subaru Outback traveling north on Philo Road and turning west to Colorado, then T-boned at a Chrysler Pacifica. The Envoy flipped over, colliding with a Chevy Equinox traveling west on Colorado as it slid through the intersection. Clark Rivest said that the driver of the Pacifica reported that the Envoy did not stop at all, and the driver of the Equinox described it becoming airborne through the intersection after the flip. Data obtained from the vehicle's onboard system showed that the Envoy was traveling at 48 miles per hour and did not slow down as it entered the intersection, she said. A 2-month-old child in the backseat of the Pacifica, the first vehicle struck in the crash, was taken to Carroll Foundation Hospital by ambulance and then transferred to St. Louis Children's Hospital, but ultimately died as a result of the injuries sustained. The driver, the child's mother, also sustained fractures, as did her two other children who were also in the vehicle. The driver's neck and sternum were fractured. Her 10-year-old humerus was fractured and displaced, and her 6-year-old's wrist and clavicle were fractured. Clark Rivest said that a test of Brooks' blood showed that her THC level was at 12.7 nanograms, while the legal limit is 5 nanograms. Brooks is scheduled to return to court on February 10th for a sentencing hearing. Let's now turn to J. Mark Powell and his Holy Cow history with a turkey quiz for Thanksgiving. Talking turkey, it's the closest Americans come each year to everyone eating the same meal on the same day. Turkey is essential to the Thanksgiving celebration, but how much do you know about the festive fowl we enjoy every November? Find out with this quiz. And I will read the questions. You go grab a pencil, write the answers to the question, and I'll give you the answer after I read it. It'll give you a moment to write your answers. Here we go. Number one. A popular myth claims which founding father wanted the wild turkey as our national bird? A. George Washington. B. John Adams. C. Thomas Jefferson. Or D. Benjamin Franklin. Which of those presidents wanted, or which of the founding fathers wanted the turkey as the national bird? And the answer is D. Benjamin Franklin. In 1785, in a letter, Franklin criticized the bald eagle as a national symbol and suggested the turkey instead. Modern research, though, has concluded that he wasn't serious, and he wrote the article in jest. Question number two. According to a national survey, what percentage of Americans eat turkey on Thanksgiving Day? A. 75%. B. 88%. C, 99%, or D, 100%? And the answer to that question is B. 46 million birds are consumed on Thanksgiving. And the answer to that would be 88%. Christmas is a distant second with 22 million, and Easter is third with 19 million. Number three. A glut of unsold turkeys after Thanksgiving, 1953, sparked the creation of what popular food feature? A. Leftovers. B. Direct delivery. C. TV dinners. Or D. Boil and serve meals. And the answer is C. TV dinners. Swanson was left with 260 tons of unsold turkey sitting in 10 refrigerated railroad cars. The first TV dinners came with cornbread, stuffing, peas, and sweet potatoes. And question number 4. Abraham Lincoln began the practice of unofficially pardoning a turkey in 1863. That bird was given to the Lincoln family for what occasion? A. To celebrate the Emancipation Proclamation. B. To mark the end of the Civil War. C. For Thanksgiving dinner. Or D. For Christmas dinner. And the answer to that is D. Christmas dinner. On Christmas Eve, Lincoln's 10-year-old son, Tad, tearfully begged his father to spare the turkey that he had named Jack. Lincoln wrote a presidential pardon to appease the boy. And finally, question number 5. In 1926, a man in Mississippi sent President Calvin Coolidge what animal to have for Thanksgiving dinner? A. A goose. B. A turkey. C. A possum. Or D. A raccoon. The answer to that question, D. A raccoon. Vinnie Joyce of Nittyuma, Mississippi, shipped the critter to the White House. I guess the next question would be, what did they do with that raccoon? All right, that concludes J. Mark Powell's questionnaire, his little about the Thanksgiving, and we'll continue on in our communities. How about an article from Tolono? What's cool in school? Unity fans fired up for special time of the season. By Rob LeCates. Like his father and two uncles before him, senior Crew Eckstein will play for a state title when the Unity football team plays Byron on Friday in Normal. His family and rabid fans from 5 Champaign County towns of Tolono, Philo, Sydney, Pisodum, and Sadorus that feed into the high school will be cheering like never before. Now there's 4 of us in the family that have all gone to state, and it's just a great feeling, said Trey Eckstein, the father of the standout Rockets running back. Familiar names dot a Unity roster built on tradition and spurred by the community support. The Rockets are looking for their first state championship in their 7th trip to the big game. Playoff season is a special time around Unity, and seeing the town all decorated and supporting the boys is a great thing, Eckstein said. Senior captain Colton Langendorf is following the footsteps of an older brother, Austin, who played for a state runner-up Rockets team in 2021, also against Byron. His father, Ben Langendorf, has helped with a painting and sign campaign meant to inspire the Rockets. Hopefully the boys just play their hearts out, and even if they lose, you can't hang your heads as long as they played the best way they could, Dad said. That's what I'm looking forward to. Don't give away a game, just go play the best you can and see where the chips fall. During Tuesday's afternoon pep rally at Rocket Center, attended by both high school and junior high students, performances by the school band, dance team, and cheerleaders revved up an impressive crowd. Front and center in the bleachers was the Rockets football team, with Principal Bill Behrens and Coach Tony Reitz speaking to the crowd before Reitz introduced his 4 captains, Dane Eisenmenger, Trey Hoggard, Colton Langendorf, and Colson Miller. Behrens went to the captains to visit the district's grade schools on Tuesday before stopping by Casey's in Philo for food and drinks. When we came into the store, the manager had all of the boys sign their Unity football poster, Behrens said. All of the workers expressed their excitement for the team's accomplishments this season and for the state championship game. The warm welcome and well wishes Tuesday morning showed that football truly embodies the heart and soul of our community. As is tradition, the Rockets will start game day on Friday by chowing down at the Philo Tavern. The restaurant's spread includes eggs and biscuits, and parents help supply additional items like fruit and cinnamon rolls. Then it's off to Hancock Stadium for the 4 p.m. kickoff between the Rockets, 12-1, and the Tigers, 13-0. This group had a lot of expectations, and I feel like they have met them and not used it as a distraction, so I've been very pleased with the boys have been tuned into everything and playing good football, Ben Langendorf said. It's really been fun to watch. And we're going to take a break here with this first segment of the News Gazette. I'll return shortly.